more of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Teich. Every year, awards like the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award honor what many people think of as serious fiction. Weighty titles wrestling with weighty issues in a way that's sometimes accessible, sometimes less so. It's rare to find fantasy titles in the category of those so honored, but Milwaukee writer Philip Martin would urge you not to overlook the genre or think of it as frivolous. Martin's new book is called The Purpose of Fantasy, a reader's guide to 12 selected books with good values and spiritual depth, and he's with us now to talk about some of those books. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mitch.
The title of the book is The Purpose of Fantasy. Let me take a riff off of that title and ask you what the purpose of this book is. What are you hoping to accomplish? Who are you hoping to reach?
The working title for the book was actually something like 12 fantasy books to read that will make you a better person. It's really kind of a self-help kind of concept of fantasy. And then I thought, oh, that's a little too self-help. And actually, the people who I think will enjoy this are people who already love fantasy. So, you know, they don't need the help. I was just trying to be more encouraging people to see fantasy as kind of more from a serious light or practical light, that actually fantasy isn't escapist, but it's actually very useful. It's a way of creatively dealing with real problems that you can apply to your life. And, you know, it's good for families, it's good for kids, it's good for old folks. It's, you know, really something that's often looked down on, I felt.
Complaint that some have is that it is removed from the real world, and so it doesn't deal with real world issues. And you kind of confront that in this book.
That's exactly what got me to write this, is there was recently a study that showed how much kids love to read fantasy. You know, there's a huge predominance over other types of books like, you know, mysteries and action adventure. You know, they love fantasy. And then kind of the predictable reportage on that was that, well, of course, because, you know, we're living in a scary world and kids naturally want to escape.
There are a lot of scary worlds in fantasy.
And of course there are. And those who write fantasy and those who read fantasy in any depth know that, you know, it's not an escapist form of fiction. It's all of the writers talk about trying to deal with issues that were actually very important, very complex, and that they found fantasy was a way to deal with kind of inner, intangible values in a way that made them tangible and so let people explore these creative storylines. And importantly, you not just go into fantasy, but you return from fantasy. Tolkien talked about three stages. You prepare yourself for wonder. You go into this wondrous world, and then you come back. And his point and others was that it's in the coming back that fantasy creates its meaning, where you've explored ideas in a way that's, you know, much more imaginative and creative and deal with things like, you know, right and wrong, good and bad, good and evil, you know, huge, huge issues that are actually the ones that do face us in the real world.
I think you make the point in here that fantasy is wonderful in the strictest sense of the word, like full of wonder.
Full of wonder, and that is, in a sense, kind of an ability. It's a creative, some have described it as like it's a kind of muscle of the heart or the soul, something. The more you exercise it, the more capacity you have for it. And so there were a lot of people who were interested in spiritual ideas, C.S. Lewis, who saw fantasy as a way to develop people's powers of imagination and wonder in the sense of really awe and amazement in a way that would help them be more appreciative of the real world and how amazing it is too. Chesterton said, in the fairy tale, the apple is golden. And when you come back, you realize how amazing it is that apples grow on trees and they're green and the rivers run with beautiful waters, and that's amazing too.
What are you getting at when you talk about spiritual depth? I mean, is this the idea that especially for the 12 titles that you feature, are they grappling with bigger questions than just good versus evil?
Yeah, their fantasy can be used to really address all sorts of issues or ideas. I started with a couple of books. There was one called Momo and another called Tuck Everlasting. Tuck Everlasting talks about the idea of what if you could be immortal? There's a spring in the woods that if, you know, you drank from it, you would become immortal. And it has this group of kind of backwoods folks, a family called the Tuck family. Unlike the vampires of today who are immortal and just, you know, ultra cool and sophisticated. And Tucks are kind of backwoods and they're just kind of stuck in being immortal.
Like backwoods ennui.
Yeah, and they, you know, their life just repeats. And at some point they say, you know, we're just like, we're like rocks on the side of the road. Life is going by and here we sit. And so this author, Natalie Babbitt, who's, you know, won many major awards for literature, used this story to talk about the idea of, you know, what if you could? And so the protagonist in the story has to decide, does she want to drink from the spring? And so she makes a, you know, decision by the end of the book. So that's kind of a limit. It's not, you wouldn't call that good and evil, but it's exploring an intangible issue and making it very tangible in this book.
You also mentioned Momo, and I was hoping we could touch on that because it seems like the issue at the heart of it is kind of subtle, actually. It deals – and this is by an author who had a much better known book, the author of the Neverending Story, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, he's dealing with the use of time.
It deals with a lot of things, the use of time, everyday life, and how we use it. And it's a wonderful story of a young mysterious girl, kind of a Pippi Longstocking type. She lives on her own, just is a wonderful person. And her wondrous talent is listening, you know, which is magical in the way she does it. A very simple concept. But these folks, the gray men come to town and they offer to help people become more efficient. And the concept is they'll save all this time. And the gray men offered to bank it for them. And so they quickly turn the town into a bunch of hardworking people who no longer have any fun. They no longer have any art. They have no games. And so it's the children who look at this and try to figure out what to do about it. You know, there's kind of a Buddhist element to the story of every time and daily life and how we disconnect them or measure them in ways instead of just being here now. It's an amazing book, one very little known or read in the U.S. It's available in English translation.
And the author is?
Michael Endy.
Yeah.
There's a new book, new English-American version out. And I said at some point I think I might have written this book just to get people to read Momo.
Well, and along the similar lines of this realization that children can take on things in a different way comes a book that many of us have read but maybe not thinking of it in those terms. The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry is one that you even point out at first blush kind of looks like a comic book.
Yeah, it's almost like a you know, graphic novel kind of odd story. It's kind of, you know, surreal at parts, but it's also one of the most loved and most read books around the world. And he's a case where, you know, it's obviously a children's book, but it's not a children's book. You know, it's loved by adults. And
in a strange way, it's almost a memoir.
You know, he also was a pilot and he wrote many – it was some wonderful books about flying and kind of the mystical aspects of flying. And so this is kind of about the mystical aspects of living. And it just has, you know, beautiful insight. And like a lot of these books, the point is that these are not children's or adults' books. Categorizing them isn't the point. That if it has a story that's useful to you, it's worth reading.
And you also raise a really interesting point that in the original French, the people that are sort of contrary to the Little Prince are just the big people, and we think of them when we read this in English as the adults, but the original version never makes that distinction.
Yeah, it kind of challenges us to think, have we gotten old? Have we just gotten bigger? And have we lost our childhood senses, or are they part of us still? And fantasy authors, I think, tend to say, you still have this in you. You still have the child as part of you. You have fantasy and imagination as you grow up, and that, you know, fantasy is a way to draw out these creative ideas again and get us to look at the world fresh and maybe come up with some fresh ways of dealing with it.
You wrote that you had thought at one point of including Winnie the Pooh in this book but abandoned that idea in favor of one from a series featuring the Moomin Trolls. And the book you spotlight is Finn Family Moomin Troll, which I will concede is currently being read in the Tyke household at this very moment. And it's a – I will just by way of a preface say they are a unique group of creatures.
They're weird.
That's you know, a Winnie better way to put it.
Yeah. Winnie the Pooh and his friends are kind of blithe, jaunty, free-spirited types, but it's all kind of mild-mannered, pleasant adventures, very or Edwardian England kind of stuff. And the Moomin Trolls, you know, it's kind of an acquired taste. A lot of people haven't read those, but almost everyone who's read them really loves the stories. And it just occurred to me I wanted to do Winnie the Pooh, and then I thought, oh, Moomin Trolls are so much better because they're so much more reflective of the human condition in a kind of a richer, you know, both light and dark and just inclusive of all types of really odd wonderfully odd character. I mean, they're just eccentric, but they're all very loving in their way, and they're all embraced in the central family, the Moomin Troll family. And they're just – they're wonderful stories, more magical, more mundane than Winnie the Pooh, but highly recommended.
The adventures are of maybe a more modest sense, and what really shows through is – the eccentricities of the characters, but only, you know, the, as you say, they're all really accepted by each other.
And, you know, interspersed with episodes of real magic. And it's a delightful group of stories. I recommend Moomin Trolls highly.
I imagine a lot of people look at the list of 12 books you feature and they say, wait a minute, where is Harry Potter? Why is Harry Potter or any of the books in that series not included in your list?
Where is Harry Potter? You know, I've, of course, considered it, and I sort of passed on some of the big blockbuster, big series. The Lord of the Rings isn't here, but the thoughts that went into those books are here. I think I tended to pick briefer books that would be easier to pick up and read and, you know, be done with them. They happened to be three-quarters of them are children's books, but I didn't intend that. I was just looking for the best books that you could read to get this sense of the spiritual depth of fantasy. And then when you read Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings, you will see those elements in there. But they're often more hidden with all this action and activity that goes in the big stories.
But you are not necessarily steering people away from Lord of the Rings or from Harry Potter.
No, not at all. It's more just these are more kind of entryway drugs to make you realize what fantasy, why fantasy is chosen by all these amazing authors. I mean, these are some of the top authors in the world. Many of them wrote adult books that were highly regarded. So it's not just an off subgenre of easy to write fiction. Someone said that fantasy was the original fiction. It used to be all fiction was fantasy and had this mythological impact and significance. And, you know, maybe other fiction has gotten lighter while fantasy has kept its depth is one way to say it.
Did you go back and reread all 12 of these books before
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, love doing it. These are books that are easy, I mean, are meant to be reread. And I think C.S. Lewis said, you know, reading them the first time, it's kind of like wasting a fine wine on thirst. You really savor it in the second or third reading. So,
well, hopefully there will be plenty of people who listen to these and go back for a second or a third reading. Philip Martin, thanks so much.
Thanks, Mitch.
Milwaukee writer Philip Martin's latest book is called The Purpose of Fantasy, A Reader's Guide to 12 Selected Books with Good Values and Spiritual Depth, published by Crispin Books. We'll return with more of Lake Effect in just a moment on Milwaukee Public Radio.